On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
Good evening and welcome to SBS World News Radio. I'm Peggy Giacomelos.
And I'm Matt Kennellan. Coming up, more details revealed about the upcoming closure of the Manus Island Detention Centre.
Also on the program,
I will do my very best to meet the nation's expectations by delivering on our promises one by one.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe claims an election victory.
And
it's one win, you know, it was hard earned. Enjoy it for what it is and then continue on with what we've got to do.
It's been a big weekend in sport, including the A-League and Rugby Union.
Those stories and more coming up in the next half hour.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Matt Kennellan. A political war of words has broken out over the national broadband network after more evidence emerged of cost blowouts and service difficulties. NBN chief Bill Morrow has admitted the network will struggle to compete with emerging mobile communication technologies. Opposition leader Bill Shorten has seized on the latest revelations in Question Time.
The Prime Minister's second-rate copper NBN,
members on my right,
is creating a digital divide across Australia, with the one side of some streets getting first-rate fibre, while the other side gets second-rate copper. How is this fair? Will the Prime Minister admit that his second-rate copper NBN is creating a digital divide across this nation?
But Malcolm Turnbull says the coalition is doing its best with what it was left by the previous government.
What a train wreck it was. Tens of billions of dollars wasted by the Labor Party, leaving us with the biggest corporate train wreck ever undertaken by a federal government. Now, what we've done is we've got on with the job. We've got on with the job, and we're playing the hand of cards we are dealt by Labor, and we're building it.
Immigration officials have rejected claims of torture in the Manus Island Detention Centre. The Australian-run facility in Papua New Guinea is due to close by the end of the month. Immigration Department head Michael Pezzullo has clashed with Greens Senator Nick McKim in a Senate hearing over the fate of those who refuse to go.
I don't think it'll entail the loss of life at all. PNG is very seized of these issues. It's thinking very carefully about how it might deal with what is regrettably attitudes that have been stoked and fuelled by troublesome outsiders who are encouraging these poor souls to...
Oh, please, just spare us the fake sympathy. Well, you've been torturing
Senator
them
McKim,
for four and a half years.
West Indies cricket star Chris Gayle has denied exposing his genitals to a massage therapist, saying such conduct would deserve punishment. The 38-year-old told a Sydney jury the claims were the most devastating and humiliating he had come across in his life. Gayle is suing over articles in which it was claimed during an incident in Sydney more than 2 years ago, he intentionally exposed his genitals to a female massage therapist and indecently propositioned her in the West Indies dressing room. Gayle's barrister, Bruce McClintock SC, has accused Fairfax Media of setting out to destroy the cricket great in a vicious, savage and false attack published in three of its newspapers early last year. Two people have died in a light plane crash on a Northern Territory highway. Police say the small aircraft came down around 1:30 p.m. on Monday. Plane wreckage was strewn across the now closed Gunpoint Road, 25 kilometres from Darwin. New research has found children of same-sex couples do just as well as those with heterosexual parents. The analysis was conducted by researchers from leading children's health institutes and hospitals across Australia. Lead author Professor Frank Oberclade from the Murdoch Children's Research Institute has told the ABC it's important to dispel some of what he calls misinformation about the issue.
It's a consistent pattern through all of the studies, and taken as a body of research, there's dozens of articles in different countries and different journals. Taken as a body of research, the conclusions are very clear. We can make those conclusions with a great deal of confidence that children do just as well. And this is a very important message for the children themselves. It's reassuring that they're not different. And it's a very important message for their parents, because some of this debate has been very hurtful and distressing for them.
One of Australia's greatest music pioneers, George Young, has died at the age of 70. Young was a guitarist for the Easy Beats and a producer for AC/DC, the band fronted by his brothers Angus and Malcolm. In a statement, publishing house Albert said Young created a new sound for the Australian music industry and spent many years writing hits for other acts, including John Paul Young, Meat Loaf and former Easy Beats colleague Stevie Wright. The Scottish-born Young wrote the Easy Beats classic Friday on My Mind with Harry Vander. The pair formed a prolific songwriting partnership and was inducted in the ARIA Hall of Fame in 1988. And now a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, partly cloudy, 23. Adelaide, shower or 2 and 28. Melbourne, shower or 2 developing, 21. Hobart, showers and 18. Canberra, partly cloudy, 25. Wollongong, mostly sunny, 25 as well. Sydney, much the same and 26. Newcastle, mostly sunny also, 25. Brisbane, possible early shower, 26. Cairns, mostly sunny, 31. And Darwin, also mostly sunny and 34. And Peggy, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks, Matt. That's Matt Connellan from the SBS World Newsroom. And you're listening to SBS World News Radio on this Monday evening. The time is 6 past the hour. I'm Peggy Giacomelos. As we heard in the news, more details have been revealed about the upcoming closure of the Manus Island Detention Centre. Officials say hundreds of millions of dollars will be spent rehousing the remaining detainees, while those who refuse to leave may be removed by force. Andrea Nierhoff has more.
Just over a week before shutdown and the fate of more than 600 asylum seekers and refugees on Manus Island remains uncertain. The centre is set to close permanently on October 31, and all essential resources, including food services, drinking water, medical treatment and electricity, switched off. But with hundreds of people yet to be resettled, plus another 156 who've had their asylum bids rejected, the Australian government will have to find somewhere for them to stay. Immigration officials estimate this will cost between $150 and $250 million. Department head Michael Pizzullo told a Senate estimates hearing in Canberra that those who refuse to leave will be dealt with by Papua New Guinea's Defence Force.
Well, the first point, Senator, is that they're not meant to be there. They're not meant to be on a military base on the morning of the 1st of November. And secondly, the maintenance of public order and issues to do with trespass and the rest of it are matters for Papua New Guinea.
All service providers and Australian personnel are expected to leave by the closure date. Green Senator Nick McKim said the government is risking a repeat of a previous incident earlier this year when PNG Navy personnel fired on crowds of refugees at the centre. Border Force Deputy Commissioner Mandy Newton admitted some of them have expressed concerns for their safety.
My understanding, they're refusing to move because some of them don't like the idea of having to cook for themselves, to undertake some of their own... cleaning. Some are indicating concerns about safety.
That's right.
The safety provisions are being provided with fenced areas around each of the facilities.
But Mr. Pizzullo rejected this, as well as claims of torture at the facility, leading to an angry exchange with Senator McKim.
I don't think it'll entail the loss of life at all. PNG is very seized of these issues. It's thinking very carefully about how it might deal with what is regrettably attitudes that have been stoked and fuelled by troublesome outsiders who are encouraging these poor souls to...
Oh, please, just please, to, just spare us the fake sympathy.
Well,
you've been torturing
Senator
them
McKim,
for four and a half
up
years.
With your...
54 people have already travelled to the United States under a resettlement deal to take in up to 1,250 people, although Border Force officials have hinted this number could change. Another 52 have voluntarily returned home, accepting a $25,000 payment from the Australian government in the process. Around 140 of the 606 men left on Manus, who've been designated non-refugees, will be housed at a site called Hillside House, while the rest will be split between two facilities at East and West Loringal. Speaking during question time in Parliament, Immigration Minister Peter Dutton said the last thing they want is to end up shifting people onto Nauru.
What we need to do in all of this is to make sure that we don't get new boat arrivals, because those new arrivals would be relocated to Nauru. They would be held there. And we've been very clear about the fact that we don't want people under any circumstance to come to Australia if they've sought to arrive by boat.
That's Immigration Minister Peter Dutton ending that report by Andrea Nierhoff. 10 past the hour here on SBS Radio with Peggy Giacomelos. Thanks for tuning in. Moving overseas now, and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has secured a strong mandate in a snap election that has immediately promised to deal firmly with threats from North Korea. Mr. Abe's Nationalist Coalition won more than two-thirds of the parliamentary seats to reach an important so-called supermajority. Hannah Sinclair reports.
Japanese voters have given Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's ruling coalition enough seats to maintain a two-thirds majority in the lower house of parliament. The verdict in the country's snap election means the Liberal Democratic Party and its coalition partner, Kamito, keep their two-thirds majority in both houses of parliament. It gives Mr. Abe a strong mandate to pass his legislative agenda, which includes proposed changes to the country's pacifist constitution. And he has also promised to deal firmly with North Korea after it threatened to sink Japan in recent months.
The ruling coalition has been given a majority, which I believe reflects the nation's desire for political stability that can produce concrete results. I will do my very best to meet the nation's expectations by delivering on our promises one by one.
The so-called supermajority in parliament lets Mr. Abe propose changes to the constitution imposed on Japan by the United States after the Second World War. The constitution, which forces Japan to renounce war and limit its military to a self-defense role, has not been altered in more than 70 years. Any amendments must be approved by two-thirds of each chamber of parliament and then by a majority in a public referendum. The Constitutional Democratic Party of Japan was formed just before the election and could be the main opposition. Its president, Yukio Adano, has promised to defy any constitutional changes.
We campaigned on a promise to change politics through a grassroots movement, not from the top down. I have made it clear that we do not support amending the Constitution that would approve the right of collective self-defense. If this process moves forward, we will do our best to work with the people to prevent it from succeeding.
Mr. Abe's election campaign benefited from a weak and splintered opposition. Tokyo Governor Yuriko Kaoki promised to shake up Japan's political scene with her party, the Party of Hope, but declined to run for a seat herself, leading to confusion. The former television presenter was not in Japan on election day and says she failed to communicate effectively with voters.
I feel sorry that some of our candidates had to face difficult battles. Also, I feel sorry for them because I should have chosen words more prudently to better communicate my true intentions. Meanwhile, I still believe our political party should consist of people who share basic policies. I assume full responsibility for the founding of Hope.
The turnout for the election was less than 54%, barely missing out on setting a record low. The win raises Mr. Abe's chances of securing a third three-year term as leader of the Liberal Democratic Party when the party votes next September. That would give the 63-year-old the opportunity to become Japan's longest-serving prime minister.
Hannah Sinclair reporting there. Still to come on the program.
When I heard of Robert Mugabe's appointment to the WHO as a WHO ambassador, quite frankly, I thought it was a bad April Fool's joke.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe's appointment as the World Health Organization's goodwill ambassador revoked. We'll have more on that story after this break. It's 14 past the hour.
Are you reaching your full potential? Your new career is within reach. Aged care, childcare, hospitality, business management, beauty therapy, disability support and more. Reach for Training is offering customised national recognised and accredited qualifications. Flexible study options on the job, at home or in the classroom. Government incentives of up to $4,000 are available for eligible employers through apprenticeship and traineeships. T's and C's apply. reachfortraining.com.au. RTO 91280.
An international crisis beyond the borders of Europe.
SBS World News is Australia's only globally focused news service.
The government's response was swift,
bringing the events of the world home.
For Indigenous Australians, it was the outcome they'd longed for.
The latest international news and national stories of the day.
From refugee to recognised business leader.
Good evening, I'm Janice Peterson.
And I'm Anton Eanes.
SBS World News, nightly 6:30 on SBS and on demand.
Start with a pinch of this, add a little bit of that, and you have all the ingredients for the perfect recipe. Check out Food Network, Australia's new food channel.
Absolutely delicious.
Serving up 24/7 food free on Channel 33.
Watch the Premier League on SBS. The biggest names and teams in football, live, free and in HD.
Face to face with Zabaleta. Rose with the cross. And
stretched it to his own goal by Kolarov. Saturday nights on SBS.
sbs.com.au/news is your destination for Australian and international news. Listen to audio highlights, subscribe to our podcast, and hear bulletins and programs on demand. There are photo galleries, special features, videos, and updates throughout the day. It's all at sbs.com.au/news.
Yeah, and online you're listening to SBS World News Radio. And don't forget you can check out our podcasts online anytime at sbs.com.au/news/audio. I'm Peggy Giacomelos. The time is almost 17 past the hour. Coming up a little later in the program, young people in Victoria's multicultural communities speaking out against alleged racial profiling at the hands of Victoria Police. That's still to come on the program. Before that, though, moving overseas and Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe's appointment as the World Health Organization's goodwill ambassador has been revoked. Global outrage has prompted the head of the UN organization to rethink his decision to pick Mr. Mugabe for the role. Aileen Phillips has more.
Last week's appointment of Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe as the World Health Organization's goodwill ambassador had triggered an international backlash. At the time, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus had praised Zimbabwe's health system. He described Zimbabwe as a country that places universal health coverage and health promotion at the centre of its policies to provide health care to all. He asked for Mr. Mugabe's help in fighting diseases like heart attacks, strokes and asthma across Africa, and said he hoped Mr. Mugabe could influence his peers in Africa on the issue. But now Dr. Tedros has issued a written statement explaining his decision to rescind the appointment.
I have listened carefully to all who have expressed their concerns and heard the different issues that they have raised. I have also consulted with the government of Zimbabwe, and we have concluded that this decision is in the best interests of the World Health Organization. It is my aim to build a worldwide movement for global health. This movement must work for everyone and include everyone.
He went on to say,
I thank everyone who has voiced their concerns and shared their thoughts. I depend on constructive debate to help and inform the work I have been elected to do.
Mr. Mugabe, the world's oldest head of state at age 93, has long been accused of violent repression, election rigging and presiding over Zimbabwe's economic ruin. He's also faced a backlash for going overseas to seek medical treatment as Zimbabwe's own healthcare system has collapsed under his government. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau sharply criticised Mr. Mugabe's appointment with the UN's healthcare branch.
When I heard of Robert Mugabe's appointment to the WHO as a WHO ambassador, quite frankly, I thought it was a bad April Fool's joke. It is absolutely unacceptable, absolutely inconceivable that this individual would have a role as a goodwill ambassador for any organization, much less the World Health Organization. And I can assure you that our diplomats and the folks at Global Affairs Canada are busy making that very, very clear to the international community.
His views were echoed in the United States and Britain, with British diplomats formally raising serious concerns with the World Health Organization. A large group of Africans also gathered outside Zimbabwe's London embassy to peacefully protest the appointment. Protest coordinator Fungayi Mabunu says Mr. Mugabe's appointment made little sense.
It shows that the World Health Organization, they're sweeping what is happening in Zimbabwe under the carpet, and they think Zimbabwe is a job. For them to actually appoint him a goodwill ambassador when people in Zimbabwe could not know basic health care.
A senior member of Mr. Mugabe's Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front Party, Marshall Gore, had maintained Mr. Mugabe's appointment was in Africa's best interests.
I think the appointment is fair in my view, and I think he will do a great job to influence health promotion initiatives and policy in Africa. And I think he attracts the attention of many African countries, and I think we have to look at it from that this is an appointment that is largely focusing on Africa.
Dr. Tedros became the first African to lead the World Health Organization in May, taking on a mandate to tackle perceived politicization in the organization.
Aileen Phillips ending that report by Evan Young here on SBS Radio, where the time is 21 past the hour. And we'd love to hear what you think about the major news stories of the day. You can leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at SBS News. Peggy Giacomelos with you this evening. We'll have the latest news headlines coming up in a couple of minutes' time. But before that, young people in Victoria's multicultural communities are speaking out against alleged racial profiling at the hands of Victoria Police. Although the state's police force does have a policy against racial profiling, there is nothing in place to track whether offenders, or officers rather, are complying with the policy. Amanda Kopp reports.
Sudanese-born Den Malik is a qualified youth worker and has experienced what he describes as racial profiling by Victoria's police force. He recalls one of the many times he was pulled over by police in what was supposed to be a random check.
I was asked to produce my documents to prove that the car belongs to me. So I asked the police what I've, was there anything that I've done wrong or anything. And said, we just want to make sure the car belongs to you, mate.
Law student of Indian Fijian heritage, Sajda Yakub, has also grown frustrated with random police stop and checks, which she believes are based on race, not reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing.
It makes you feel like an outsider, so it makes you feel like you're doing something wrong without ever having that intention, and it's almost as if they're planting a seed in your head and telling you that because, you know, you come from a particular faith, you should be sort of plotting against us, or you should be, you know, against us in some way, that you're not really part of the society as such, and that they have a right to stop you and question you.
The pair are part of a network of young people in Melbourne's inner north who are banding together to raise awareness of the issue. Based in the Flemington and Kensington Community Legal Centre, the peer advocacy team aims to support young people who have been impacted by discriminatory police behaviour.
We run Know Your Rights forums, so those forums are to basically educate, you know, the wider communities in different areas on, like, what exactly your rights are, what you do have to say when you're stopped, what you don't have to say, and the fact that you do have the right to remain silent, that you don't necessarily have to, you know, undergo this type of, like, intrusive questioning.
The advocacy team behind the project has also produced a video aiming to address the impacts of so-called racial profiling on themselves, their friends, and communities. It also calls for urgent action from Victoria Police and the Victorian Parliament to monitor and end the practice.
Our police force are meant to protect us, not scare us.
But we get treated with suspicion wherever we go.
Sociologist from Victoria University, Dr. Claire Land, says she hopes to see Victoria Police implement methods of tracking the levels of racial profiling in their random stop and checks.
Well, we're asking the police to adopt a new habit, which is to record the reasons for stops, the perceived race of those they're stopping, and also the outcome of the stops. And that way we can sit down together, review the statistics.
In 2013, Victoria Police committed to explore the possibility of collecting data on stop and checks, but it's yet to implement such a policy. In a statement, it says it has zero tolerance for racial profiling, adding that members are trained to police in response to a person's behaviour, not the colour of their skin. However, Dr. Land says police policy and the experiences of young people do not match up.
There's a gap between police policy, which rightly outlaws police from racially profiling. There's a gap between that and what the young people are saying. They're continuing to report wrongful, intrusive and often repeated experiences of being stopped for no good reason.
Thanks to Amanda Cobb for that story by Luke Waters, and you're listening to SBS World News Radio. It's 25 past the hour. News headlines coming up in a little while, but before that, it's been another big weekend in sport. There was plenty to see in the A-League. Relief in rugby union and the Ashes getting underway for Australia's female cricketers. Here's Sunil Awasthi with all the latest.
We begin with football, and 1 week after the Melbourne derby, it was Sydney's turn for the A-League's version of a civil war. But unlike round two's Melbourne version, round three's Sydney derby had no winner, though it had plenty of just about everything else. Sydney FC came back from an early 2-0 deficit to tie the game, and then nearly won it late in the contest. The final result, a 2-2 draw, giving Sydney FC coach Graham Arnold mixed emotions.
The signs of a champion team and a team with great character is to fight back from 2-0 down, and two sloppy goals, two terrible goals that we conceded, and you know, something I need to address is our start in games. You know, it's not the first time we started like that, but it's to show the character that we did was fantastic.
Melbourne City is top of the A-League ladder with 3 wins from 3 games after beating Wellington 1-0. In rugby union, a rarity, an Australian Test victory over New Zealand. The 23 points to 18 win in Brisbane wasn't enough to bring back the Bledisloe Cup. Those hopes disappeared when New Zealand won the first 2 matches in the series earlier this year. But you can't afford to be choosy when it comes to triumphs over the two-time defending world champions. Australian coach Michael Checker seeing what his side did from more of a long-term perspective.
It's one win. You know, it was hard-earned. Enjoy it for what it is and then continue on with what we've got to do. We want to stay by building our depth over the rest of this year, and we'll try and give those opportunities out to the guys this weekend.
This weekend sees a match against the Barbarians in Sydney, who'll be coached by former Australian coach Alan Jones. Many frontline Australian players will be rested for the match as Checker seeks to build that depth he aspires to in the national playing ranks. In cricket, the men's Ashes doesn't start until next month. But the women's sides of Australia and England have already begun the battle for their Ashes, and it's Australia who is on top early. Unlike the men's series, the women's Ashes is contested across Test one-day and 2020 matches. In the first one-day match, Australia has triumphed narrowly, with 2 wickets to spare and only 5 balls to spare. Alex Blackwell was adjudged best of field for her 67 not out. She's told Channel 9 the closeness of the game made it stressful and also made her adjust her style to make sure her team won.
It got to a really exciting game there, and I guess that's great for the crowd, but it does make it hard for the players. And we talk about match winning not outs, and I had to sort of curb my enthusiasm to hit some boundaries to just make sure I was there at the end.
The women's Ashes will be contested across 3 one-day matches, 1 test match and then 3 2020 matches. The second of the one-day matches is in Coffs Harbour on Thursday.
Thanks to Sunil Awasthi there for the latest in the news. In news when it comes to sport, it's 28 past the hour, and let's take a look at what else is making news before we go. A political row erupts over the long-term viability of the NBN after revelations. The cost of the network has blown out by more than $90,000 to link up just one Tasmanian home. A report finds children of same-sex couples are no worse off as the debate over the gay marriage postal survey intensifies. Senators and senior bureaucrats clash over immigration detention as hundreds of Manus Island asylum seekers and refugees refuse to leave the centre, which is due to close next week. Overseas, and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe claims an election win as voter turnout is restricted by a damaging typhoon. Fresh claims an Australian woman was fatally shot in Kenya last week may have been targeted, with the woman's lawyer urging authorities to keep investigating her death. In other news, West Indies cricket star Chris Gayle denies exposing his genitals to a massage therapist as his defamation action against Fairfax Media begins in the New South Wales Supreme Court. The music world mourns the death of Australian industry pioneer George Young, guitarist for the iconic 60s band The Easy Beats and a prolific songwriter. And two people have died in a light plane accident near Darwin. Let's take a look at tomorrow's weather across the country. Partly cloudy, a top of 23 for Perth. In Adelaide, a shower or two and 28. In Melbourne, a shower or two developing also, top of 21. Showers also for Hobart, 18 degrees. Partly cloudy, 25 for Canberra. In Wollongong, mostly sunny, 25 as well. Much the same for Sydney, a top of 26. Mostly sunny in Newcastle, 25. In Brisbane, a possible early shower and 26. Mostly sunny for Cairns and 31. And also a sunny day for Darwin, a top of 34 degrees. That's the program for this evening. You can join Janice Peterson on SBS News for all the latest. And don't forget, you can go online and listen to our stories anytime at sbs.com.au/news/audio. I'm Peggy Giacomelos. Thanks for listening.